Welcome to the Everyday Innovator podcast for product managers, leaders, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping you become a product master. Listen and get ready for higher performance, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, and this is where product leaders and managers make their move to product masters, learning practical knowledge that leads to more influence and confidence so you can create those products that customers love and do it over and over and have a great experience doing that. We love launching products that customers love. Now, you have a lot of tools to help you learn about your customers, tools such as customer visits, interviews, and surveys. And one of my favorites is ethnography, and I find some of the best insights that others, like your competitors, may have missed can come from observing customers or the people that you think should be or will be your customers. And one form of this is called web ethnography. And an expert at it, as well as many other customer research tools, is Bill McDowell. And I really like web ethnography as a way to move into ethnography in a much faster, lower cost sort of way than we might traditionally think about. And Bill's going to talk about how we can actually do this, how we can conduct ethnography step by step over the web. He is the COO of Accelerant Research and has vast experience conducting research, customer research for a wide variety of customers. Now, as we talk, if you hear something you want to go back to, remember, I take all the notes for you. You'll find a summary of our discussion, all the key points at theeverydayinnovator.com/254. Now, let's talk with Bill. Bill, thanks for joining the Everyday Innovators.
Happy to be here.
Happy to talk with you about qualitative research, research for consumers and markets. And it's one of my favorite topics is how do we find out more insights about our consumers so we can actually understand their problems, deliver products that create value for them. What was your path to that? How did you get involved in doing this kind of research?
Yeah, how did I fall into research?
Yeah.
I think you ask anyone that's a researcher how they got into research, and the answer is usually by accident.
Hmm.
My background, my education was marketing. I thought that I was going to be Don Draper, ad exec man, graduated from school and needed a job.
Uh-huh.
Anything with marketing or advertising in the title sounded good to me. I had a course in market research in college. I'd taken statistics. Hated both of them, but I fell into a junior analyst role at a research agency.
Huh.
Began doing this in practice and fell in love with it. Something about just the getting behind the consumer decision making process. Mm-hmm. And understanding what it is that make these irrational beings tick. It's wonderful, and the fact to be able to help. You know, all different lines of business within an organization. Like everybody comes and asks research for answers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, kind of fell into it by accident, but that's all I've done, since. So I've been in research for 20 years now. So spent my first 6 years at a research supplier, kind of learning the ropes, learning to cut my teeth as a researcher. Went over to the corporate side for a couple of gigs, one at Lowe's Home Improvement, uh-huh. One at Bank of America headquarters in their innovation research team. From Bank of America, actually started up Accelerant Research, where I've been ever since.
And doing research for a variety of customers.
Indeed.
Excellent. So we're going to focus on the qualitative aspect of research, right? As you said, there's quantitative and qualitative.
Yep.
I'm an electrical engineer by background originally and enjoy both to some aspect. Mm-hmm. But I find myself, oddly enough, much more involved in qualitative research.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe because I don't know how to do quantitative well. I don't know. I found better initial insights, probably because I really love that fuzzy front end part of product development work. And I find better insights when we actually somehow encounter the customers in the wild, so to speak, right, in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of insights have you come across? What kind of problems do you find that you say, here, let's use qualitative research to address that?
Mm-hmm. It's always, usually for me, it comes down to, one of two decisions. Quantitative is more for explaining I call it the what, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I call qualitative the why. So quantitative research is fantastic for, concrete answers to specific questions when you know enough about a subject matter to be able to write a smart survey or questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
Qualitative is where you need to either understand, you know, the context behind that quantitative research that you've done, or you're entering into territory that you are, you know, close to clueless about, and you need to explore, you need to unearth and understand. And as you mentioned, you know, that kind of front end fuzzy, you know, this is where qualitative is beautiful, because it's not defined. You need to kind of use it as that inspiration source, as it were.
Yep. Excellent. Yeah. The, you know, with my researcher hat on, you know, doing the PhD work, I always thought of qualitative as building the theory, right? Let's try to make some observations, figure out what we think is going on, come up with a model to explain things. And then the quantitative research is, let's test that now. You know, we think we know what's going on. Let's get some more information. Like surveys are helpful for that, and consumer research as well.
I'm a huge fan of you know, using both in tandem, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And especially in this day and age of big data. Not even, you know, survey-based research, but all of the behavioral metrics that we have access to these days, they inevitably unearth questions and why and context and these areas for, you know, these qualitative exploration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been interesting to me that people don't know probably about some of the impact that qualitative research has had in very big ways in very small groups. Because sometimes there's complaints about just interviewing a few people or observing a few people. Yeah. And the one I came across last year was Gatorade's business turnaround when they moved to doing pre-workout products and post-workout products and everything. That was all based on interviews with 12 high school athletes, right, that started that whole new path for them. So I do like that aspect, right? Small numbers of groups. And particularly, I'm a big fan of ethnographic research when we go out and we observe users in their environment and we try to gain new insights that maybe our competitors haven't seen yet. And sometimes that gets criticized because it can take time. Usually you need trained people that have to go somewhere. So it involves travel and just the time to do the observations and then collect the data and some kind of synthesis of that data. So it's looked at as expensive and time consuming. Even then, I think it's really well worth it. But you've been doing webcam ethnography and really interested in that as an alternative. Can you just tell us about that approach in general?
Sure. And I think I'll first level set by saying when we talk about ethnography in general, I'll make the comparison between, you know, traditional ethnography and webcam ethnography. When we're talking about ethnography here, it's the business variant. So, you know, going back in history to where ethnography got its start, this is an anthropological method, right? You know, I'm sure if there's anyone with an anthropology background listening, they're going to be cringing quite a bit, because what we're talking about is, you know, kind of the business adaptation of it, right? It's inspired by, but it's not, you know, immersing yourself in a culture, for example, for, you know, months or years. This tends to be, you know, quicker hit, a couple of hours worth of, you know, spending time with a target population, consumers or, you know, users of a given product.
Okay.
So that's the level set, right? You know, webcam-based ethnography is something that we've actually gotten into at Accelerant quite a bit over the past, you know, I'd say five-ish years. And it's really been born out of just the comfort that consumers now have sharing digitally, right? Everybody's on FaceTime or Skype. You know, grandparents and toddlers are comfortable communicating via these methods. We actually got started with webcam-based qualitative research probably 10-plus years ago when it was clunky. It was you felt like you were conducting an interview with, if you've ever seen the CNN feed, you know, interviewing someone on the space station, for example, this choppy, you know, pixelated, delayed kind of conversation, which felt very forced, very contrived, and didn't feel very comfortable. Those days are over. People, consumers, are very comfortable now, you know, just sharing anything and everything via their webcam. So, you know, traditional in-person ethnography is actually sending an ethnographer, a camera person, you know, maybe some observers and note takers to the natural habitat, to the consumer's home in many cases, watching them doing something, asking them questions about it, you know, understanding in depth their interaction with whatever product category. So take, pasta sauce, for example, watching them prepare dinner and cook, and how they interact with, products packaging and all that good stuff. Doing this via webcam, you sort of put the participant or the consumer into almost like a self-directed ethnographer role. No longer is someone kind of over their shoulder invading their home. Instead, we're doing it via, a webcam-based conversation. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's, if it's the same person preparing dinner and showing us their pasta usage habits, set up the smartphone on the countertop, hit it to record and show off what it is that you're doing. A lot of times we refer to these as show and tell interviews, because it really is about not just asking someone to describe what it is that they're going through, but to be able to see it in action, where some of those nuggets of, customer frustration or pain points or these innovation opportunities can really lie.
Excellent. So from that description, and I don't have any familiarity with this area of webcam ethnography, it sounds like I could think of this as really a customer interview that we do with the benefit of the webcam, adding the video. Just like you and I, most people are listening to this right now, but you and I are on Zoom so we can see each other, just because I find that really enhances the conversation, right? And likewise, if you're doing that customer interview, being able to see them and ask them maybe to be interacting with a product or going through a task can give us more insights as well. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair comparison? Kind of this interview with more bandwidth in the sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in many cases, we used to do a lot of telephone-based ethnographic research, right? It's fantastic to be able to speak with someone, to listen to them describing, but to the extent that you can actually see them doing what it is that you're talking about, there's so much nuance that can be taken away from that.
Yeah.
Things that people, don't even realize or can't articulate.
Right.
With regard to ethnographic research, think about famous examples of like the Heinz ketchup bottle, right? The glass bottle that people used to, struggle with and beat to death to be able to get the product out.
Right.
Well, observational and ethnographic research reveals case after case after case of consumers, upside down stacking the ketchup bottle, between the yogurt and the cottage cheese in their fridge. And then, after enough examples of seeing this, the light bulb goes off and Heinz designs the upside down plastic ketchup bottle. It's that no brainer that, nobody thought of and everybody wonders why.
Yeah, exactly. It's when you get to see how people actually do the task, you get new insights.
Hey, Dad, I think you should interrupt this interview to tell your listeners something important.
Oh, what's that?
You should tell them about your new mini course.
Oh, okay. What do you suggest?
You could interview yourself.
Okay, how would that work?
It would go like this. Hi, Chad. Tell me about your new mini course. Thanks for asking, Chad. I just published the second edition of my book, Turning Ideas into Market-Winning Products. The mini course covers some of the key ideas from the book.
Brilliant! What sort of ideas?
You'll discover what to do as a product developer, manager, and innovator. Methods for finding and testing ideas that lead to valuable products customers love, how to really use the minimal viable product approach, and much more.
Splendid! Is it free?
Yes, it is, and you don't need the book to get value from the mini course.
Capital! How much time do I need to complete the course?
I made it short. Each lesson is only 5 minutes. And you'll receive a new lesson every 2 days in your email box.
Wow! Where can I get it?
Just head over to www.theeverydayinnovator.com/book.
Huzzah! What was that again?
www.theeverydayinnovator.com/book.
There's just one problem. I can't speak with an English accent.
Oh, no problem. I'll do it for you.
You know, one of my very first ethnographic research opportunities. And I had no idea that there was this body at the time called ethnography research, right? That there were actual disciplines around this. I was just observing a group of users. But you see at times, you know, in this case, when they're interacting with the computer system, talking with each other, going to a notebook to find information, right? Maybe putting a few notes on a post-it note and putting that on the computer screen. Mm-hmm. And you start to recognize, oh, you know, their task is actually taking them away from what we want them to do often because they're looking up other information. Maybe we can make that simpler for them by giving them a way to just keep all that kind of as part of the task in the computer system, right? Mm-hmm. You learn things simply by watching, and that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of where ethnography can help for sure, that this webcam ethnography. Do you have an example that you could share on where you've seen this help before, maybe a research project you've done?
Sure. We do this in a lot of different, you know, product categories and you know, verticals for different, you know, goods and services. Mm-hmm. The example that came to mind is a recent one of ours, and this was for a shoe insole company. Huh. And this was a neat bit of research because it touched a lot of different phases. It got into branding, package design, innovation for future product development as well. And a very simple bit of research where we started with a homework assignment. So asking participants to go to a store, a retailer, shop the foot care section for insoles. Actually purchase a product, bring it home. And then we engaged. And so that was kind of the pre-work to, mm-hmm. to level set them and get them prepared for the interview. Then we asked them to do a webcam-based interview. I believe these were probably, 45-minute long interviews where we, we started with actually, so this was an insole geared toward working out and fitness. And these were folks who did home gyms or home fitness. Well, step one was asking them to take us on a tour. So tell us about their space, show it to us. This is where I work out. This is how I use this type of equipment. And then, as with a lot of qualitative research, you start off very, very broad. It's almost like a funnel and you kind of work your way into the subject matter. So being able to see their space, but then getting into, their athletic shoes and, their actual aches and pains that they deal with. And then, sit down at the kitchen table and go through more of this type of conversation you and I are having where it's, the webcam based, but we also had them remember way back during their homework assignment, purchasing a product of interest to us, and to the client that I was working with, actually having them going through what we call an unboxing or unpackaging exercise of, they purchased this, open it up, the initial reaction, start talking through it. All of these little bits and pieces and artifacts that can be just of enormous value to a client strategically.
Really good. So I have questions about some of the specifics and mechanics of setting all that up. But I wonder if maybe we can just take that through more generally. Mm-hmm. If a customer comes to you and maybe we can think of another example with that was really good, and says, hey, I want to have a better understanding of how my customers are interacting with my shoelaces or whatever it is, right?
Sure.
Maybe we can go through the steps of how do you even begin thinking about this? What are you going to set up? How do you select the people that you're mm-hmm. going to use? I assume you're thinking of some kind of structured interview guide a little bit, right? Like the mm-hmm. walkthrough and what we're going to ask them, have them do. Take us through that process, how we would construct one of these.
All right. Yeah. So kind of step by step. Number one is, and this is really true of this type of ethnographic research. Mm-hmm. This is true of just about any research study. Number one is, you define your business problem, your objectives, and your target audience, really. Okay, so what is it I'm looking to learn conceptually? Not like I need to, write a questionnaire at this point or, get into super detail. This is more about the business question.
Okay.
What are the things I'm looking to learn? What's my agenda here?
So for the shoe insoles, what was their objective? What were they trying to find out about?
Yep. Their objective was to be able to go into a buyer meeting at a large retailer, I think 2 months down the road, and tell their client that they're trying to sell to, you know, you need to dedicate this much space to our product. Hmm. And here's why, based on, you know, consumer research that we've done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what they were getting ready for.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
So, you know, figure out what you want to learn and also among whom, who is your target population and what are you going to do with this information? Mm-hmm. Once you have a sense for those types of objectives, then you determine your methodology. It may be ethnography. I don't know if you can see, I'm sitting in one of our in-person focus group rooms here at Accelerant. You know, it's decision point. Okay. Is this qualitative research or is this quantitative research? We've decided that it's qualitative in nature, but what type of qualitative? Is it focus groups? Is it ethnography? Is it in-person ethnography? Is it digital ethnography?
Right, different choices.
You know, once you kind of, and there's always going to be, you know, trade-offs. There's, you know, the three-headed monster of, you know, cost, time, and quality, we'll call it. You know, you always have to be thinking about these factors. What kind of pressures are you under from a budget standpoint, from a timing standpoint? You know, do these decisions need to be made by X date, where, you know, this is drop dead for, you know, next year's planning or being able to actually get this product in motion. Sometimes that those very decisions can dictate whether or not you would do this, you know, traditional in person or online. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we talked about it previously, but online ethnography, obviously it's a pretty big cost savings over, you know, going on the road and all the travel that is involved, and it's much quicker.
Right. Yep. Good benefits.
Because of that. Yep.
Okay.
I'll go ahead.
I was wondering if you could connect some dots on that target audience for me. So just on the specific sole example, the insole example, first off, if the objective is how much space do we need on our end cap or our shelf space in the buyer's store, it seems like there's different ways we could approach that. Maybe the first direct approach would be, let's set up three different kinds of displays and monitor traffic and responses and see what that looks like.
Sure.
So I'm curious how you ended up with this approach and if there were other things you also did to maybe expand this, and then connecting the dots with what users you picked then, right? Because you said you picked people that worked out at home, which is a specific segment of, you know, people buying insoles.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd say this is probably the most crucial part of a qualitative research study is, you know, who do we even talk to? Because, you know, a large survey among, you know, hundreds of people, you can be very general in nature and kind of, in many cases, use that to determine who your real target audience is. When it comes to qualitative, you have to be more careful. You have to contrive a little bit more. You have to think about, you know, who is the sweet spot individual that we want to talk to here. And, you know, I'll throw it out. I don't know. I don't think I've mentioned it yet, but the answer to any research question is always, it depends.
Right.
So whatever factors are happening internally, and, you know, a lot of things can dictate, you know, who that target audience is. But these are conversations, you know, you sit down, you have meetings, you figure out the who of it, right? In many cases, it's you want someone who's interacted in, you know, some recent time period with the product category. That's pretty reasonable, because what you don't want is someone who, you know, is absolutely clueless about subject matter, because that comes, you know, presenting them with a new product that they would never even consider, it becomes kind of a dud and pointless interview. So, you know, you have to take great care along those lines.
Right. So how did you come up with the specific audience for the insoles?
I recall it being a back and forth process. And oftentimes a client is going to come to us with some knowledge already. Yeah. A lot of these conversations when a research agency like ours would get involved, it depends. Sometimes it's, you know, we have certain clients where we'd be right there at the front end, you know, they have no internal research department or presence, and they would engage us immediately. We're on the, you know, on a conference call with brand and product managers, and we're talking through all of these nuances with them. In other cases, we have, you know, large corporate clients that have, you know, large insights departments internally, They've already had all these conversations. They come to us with, you know, basically we've already determined the methodology. We've already determined the audience. We've already determined exactly what we want to do. Here, accelerate, go.
Okay.
So it's always a trade-off.
And always a trade-off, yeah. Yep. And in this case, clearly we wanted to find people that had some soreness, some pain, aches and pains related to feet. And sure, the at-home audience could have gone any other directions, and maybe the client had some specifics there. Mm-hmm. How do you go about finding them then?
Yep. Recruitment is a big part of qualitative mm-hmm. research. We do all of our recruitment in-house at Accelerant. We have a very large nationwide consumer panel that we draw from.
That, by the way, anyone can go sign up for if you want to participate in a future qualitative research study.
Indeed. So we will, you know, that's source number one for us is to tap into that. You know, these are folks that we've already vetted, that we've already profiled, that, you know, have already expressed interest in participating in research. So we can kind of hit on them as a first source. With qualitative research, oftentimes you're dealing with, you know, very niche and small audiences because you've got a very specific profile that you want to meet. I mean, it can be, you know, let's take the foot care example. It could be, you know, someone who's purchased at a Target in the past month, you know, this particular line or brand, and they must live in, you know, in this DMA. Because that's where, you know, the client has determined is going to be a test market for whatever this product is, right? So, you know, that large consumer panel that we have nationwide, well, that gets whittled down pretty quickly when you're layering on all of these nuances. So, you know, we'll start with our panel, but we'll also go to different advertising sources or, you know, we've got lots of different methods that we use for recruiting these participants. But it always starts with an initial profiling of them. So, you know, take them through a short screening survey, for example. This may be online. This may be on the phone. One of our team of recruiters would actually speak with these folks. And there's a reason for that, because you want to put them through their paces to a certain extent. You want to speak to them. You want to understand, you know, this is not quantitative research where, you know, it's a census of a given population. No, you've contrived this a little bit. You're putting on a show to a certain extent. You know, you want to make sure that the participants are qualified, that they have experience with the category, but you also want to make sure that, you know, they're good communicators, that they, you know, have the right equipment. If this is going to be webcam based, obviously you want to make sure that they, you know, possess the right bandwidth, the right browser, depending on the platform that you're using to collect this information. You want to make sure that they can easily take part. We call that, you know, the tech check portion of recruitment. So this is a bit of a back and forth process to make sure that, you know, who we have is the right person, that they're vetted, that they're qualified. Because ultimately, you know, when we conduct this webcam one-on-one interview, our standard is to always live stream these. So I mentioned I'm sitting in focus group facility room where we have the one-way glass, and, you know, clients can sit behind and eat the M&Ms and you know, watch as the research unfolds. When we do these digitally, we try to mirror that same experience, right? So we give live, you know, behind the scenes access to client observers and, you know, stakeholders within the team, so they can see these interviews as they're happening and unfolding.
That part's really powerful. I'm glad you brought that up. So as product managers, we need to influence someone. Maybe it's the engineering team. And having them be able to participate in real time and see what's going on from the customer's actual, you know, actions and what they're talking about can be really powerful, right? And showing the video later is certainly really useful. But just having that real-time participation, that can be really powerful.
It can. And I was just going to say that, you know, there is... Yeah, I would say one potential drawback if you don't prepare for it ahead of time with webcam-based interviewing is this sort of autopilot mentality. You know, if you're doing in-person research where the team must get together and they must be there in person as it's happening, well, they're sequestered and they have no choice but to listen in and take part. It's webcam-based. Well, they can do it at home or at their desk or on their phone while they're on the treadmill. And there is this tendency to... you know, multitask and right. to zone out, as it were.
You got
to
be checked in.
Yeah, you really do. You know, and I always look at it as you're determining an internal team, and there's a hierarchy to that. I think there are key folks internally who should be viewing every minute of every interview, mm-hmm. right? They need to be the ones who, you know, pick up on the nuance and identify those little nuggets of information. There are like your executive team and the folks at a higher level who maybe that's not such a good idea, because this stuff is, it's laborious. It's a bit of a marathon to sit through interview after interview after interview. You know, you get a high exec whose time is very valuable. You know, they're in it for 15 minutes. They don't hear what they want and they, you know, jump ship.
Right.
Instead, with those folks, what I often like to do is almost put together like a, I don't know, a Netflix binge watching.
Right.
Play, you know, grab some, you know,
best moments.
Short, your best moments, your highlights, things that you, you know, the folks who have gone through the pain of looking at every single interview have identified as the wow moments. And these you sort of pull off and show to them after the fact.
Yep. And doing so, of course, is with as little bias as possible in an ethical manner, mm-hmm. because I know sometimes we can lead to show information that we want as opposed to the full picture. So
certainly.
Important.
Certainly.
So many more things we could talk about, which is what I'm curious about. The tech involved, do you find it works equally well with a smartphone, with a laptop, with webcam? What do you find?
It depends. And these are the questions that you often need to ask up front. You know, there are certain types of studies where a webcam is just, you know, completely inappropriate for it. For example, if there's a lot of, maybe you're doing some work where you're going to be presenting maybe like trade documents or heavy and dense materials to the participant. Like, So we're doing a webcam interview right now. It's just you and me talking to one another. But with these types of webcam-based ethnographies, we can absolutely screen share. We can present materials, you know, if appropriate, marketing materials, advertisements, what have you. And by that same token, participants can share with us maybe an online shopping experience. We can flip from, you know, a webcam to, you know, a screen share.
Right.
Where participant can take us through the process of, you know, shopping online for something, or show us their social media feed where they've, you know, been talking about their, or, you know, influencing this product category or that. Mm-hmm. So many different possibilities there. So, you know, it's at that upfront stage of building the research, these are the questions you ask. You know, what types of devices should be in versus out of bounds for this research? You know, if there aren't restrictions along those lines, in certain cases, a platform that you've decided that it is appropriate for this research, it may be restrictive in terms of, you know, the types of devices it can accept. Well, you need to take that into consideration when recruiting, because, you know, if you haven't done your homework, you don't want to discover when it's, you know, interview time and you've got CMO waiting for this interview to begin, mm-hmm. that a participant is on, you know, two versions ago Android device that just doesn't work on right. this platform. That can be painful.
Speaking from experience, it sounds like.
Indeed. Have the scars to prove.
Absolutely. Good. Well, lots of good information, more details we could go into, but this gives us a good understanding of that we can accomplish more just by introducing webcams, video into our interviews. And do more with, like, you know, walk us through the unboxing, walk us through what the steps are in some process we're asking them to do, and we get new insights. Thank you for sharing all that. As listeners know, I love innovation quotes. What did you bring for us, and why did you choose it?
Okay, I have two favorites that I couldn't decide.
Let's hear them both, then.
They're in the same theme, so I'll just go with it. Number one, from the great Tupac Shakur, even though you're fed up, you've got to keep your head up. Okay. Number two is from Mark Twain, and this is, continuous improvement is better than delayed perfection. Okay, so both under the same theme, and this is what I mentioned earlier, especially with this type of ethnographic research and innovation in general, really, it's a process that you must mm-hmm. embrace. You are going to find yourself in the middle of that process getting frustrated mm-hmm. and maybe not you know, seeing or understanding. You kind of got to keep your eyes up and focused on what is the end goal.
Right.
So much innovation is about incrementality. It's not about, you know, these once in a lifetime breakthrough game changing products. Oftentimes it's, you know, a nugget of information that will help you, you know, make a shift to a packaging design that, you know, allows you to fit a few more box or a few more, you know, packages into a crate that you can now ship and save the company a ridiculous amount of money. You know, they're not sexy or exciting, but these are breakthroughs
right.
and these little base hits that really add up.
Yep. Good. I like both those quotes. The continuous improvement is important because sometimes people try to somehow build up to that perfection. Mm-hmm. And we never get there if we're not just always trying, right? That's how we get better at anything. So great quotes. Thanks for sharing that. How can people find out about the work that you do?
Sure. So accelerantresearch.com, that's number one. And I hope we can link to it because that is a mouthful.
I'll make sure it's in the show notes to make it easy to find.
Yeah. And I'm also a LinkedIn zealot. So feel free to look me up, Bill McDowell, look for the bald head. I'm happy to connect there as well.
Excellent. I'll put both those links in the show notes for us. Thanks for talking through some qualitative tools for customer research and specifically on webcam ethnography. Delighted to hear more about how we might put this into use, and I hope some listeners do try it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening to The Everyday Innovator. Please tell your friends about this, your colleagues in product management. This is a great resource for them. Why? Because this is where product leaders and managers make your move to product masters, learning practical knowledge that leads to more influence and confidence so that you can create products that customers love. Now, Bill shared a lot of good information. You know, we have those notes for you. That's at theeverydayinnovator.com/254. And I hope you put some of this into practice, how we can use web ethnography to help us learn more about our customers. And this is a really good way to get into ethnography. If you're already doing web-based interviews or phone-based interviews, this is a really good dimension to add. I think you'll find more about your customers when you can actually see how they're interacting with products or doing a task that you're solving in a better way for them. So hope you try it out. Again, the notes are at theeverydayinnovator.com/254. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit theeverydayinnovator.com.